I'm going to jump right in here. And the first question is to ask you, is it okay if I record this call?
It is okay to record this phone call.
Can you please say for the record your whole name?
In the King's Noble Land, I'm simply known as Shorbury Aubrey, the very merry Berryman. But over in the Statesland, in America, I was born as Aubrey Hunter Dietrich Berryman, but more affectionately named as Mikey by my friends and Bear by others.
Alrighty, Mikey Bear.
Yeah.
That's a pet name.
Well, I mean, now you've married the two, so now it's official.
All right, Mr. Berryman, I see in your piece called The Cricket that you have taken note of an insect that out here in the not-inside-prison world would be invisible to most people. The natural world does not really exist in prisons. Can you describe your physical environment in there for us to get a set understanding of what that's like for readers?
Well, prison is a bit more than the barbed wire and concrete flooded with light and sound that most people so recognize from news, TV, and movies. It's what the stoniness of this place seems to try and steal from you. Kind of like being surrounded by people in the prison can still make you feel desperately isolated and alone. So I guess prison would be, in a way, isolation. It would be, you know, isolation in a sea of people, if I can make that juxtaposition. And it's a strange way of doing time, where it seems to stretch out into forever, but be an instant all as one.
There is a lot of juxtaposition, it seems like. That's you overlap two there, and I think they're both apt. More specifically, though, I want to ask, because a cricket is a tiny, again, nearly invisible to most creature, to what degree do you encounter wild creatures or wild settings, or, like, to what degree while you're locked up do you encounter the natural world? Okay, so before we move on to further follow-up questions, we'd like to hear you read your piece and then return to that. Will you do that for us, please?
I can give it a shot. Here we go. My friend Mark had found a cricket with the eager joy typically reserved for innocent souls. Presented it as a gift. The twang of his dandy Tennessee accent turned on his every word. Yet my brain continued to crunch info on its own, internally printing out before my mind's eye a myriad of useless information. The house cricket, Fulmigilis domesticus, of the subfamily Delineae, a stout-bodied and black or brown, blah, 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 fast forward, please. They may feed on plants, animals, clothes, and each other. Interesting. Next section. Crickets play a large role in myth and superstition. Their presence is equated with good fortune and intelligence. Harmaya cricket supposedly causes wonderful. If one believes the facts and or superstition, I was now beholden to a bug. As Mark poked holes in the lid for air, he said, "Hey, you could be like your mascot or something." The little black creature had climbed over lettuce and bread crust in a small, clear plastic container, his insect of contentment apparent by the eager aplomb in which he scuttled. We watched the minuscule and mundane captive like a one-animal sideshow. Losing interest quickly, I offhandedly replied, "Yeah, or something." Mark's attention wouldn't be diverted even as mine rolled back over to the computer screens, calmly calling me back. who work our state industry jobs would be given a small single man cell and comforts of our own as well. I stared through the screen and sucked my teeth silently. A thought came to me unbidden. Like a Western cowboy shooting his pistol at some hapless schmuck yelling, "Dance, boy, dance!" My brain fired a thought. "Jump, Cricket, jump. Yeehaw." Friday passed, ending our work week. The weekend turned with 10 resident area channels of censored, standardized movies alongside uncut local and world news. It was a normal sanitized and safely cornered fiction alongside live, high-definition bullets, bloodshed, and bombs in the streets. Monday descended amongst a flash of flipping channels before it was welcome. I approached my work at my desk with a half-witted stare and droll shuffle, synonymous with the demeanor of my gray day. War and execution. Sometimes they're interchangeable. Then I saw, sitting there on my desk, untouched in his cream little bubble, was the Cricket. My creature's antenna bobbed over the scrap menu of sameness, as it more than likely walked the identical and diminutive perimeter over and over again. Everything he needed for sustenance was provided. A little plastic cage, the entirety of his world. Then there was a stack of work piled upon my desk, as it seemed to silently demand my attention. I exhaled in reservation for Cricket as much as myself. Yet before I was too immersed to task, Mark approached with his hands clutching something. "I found a friend for Jiminy," Mark said with a smile. He raised his cupped hands. I sighed inwardly. Another Cricket. This one was slightly larger and did not seem to appreciate its current predicament. Mark's most recent capture almost escaped his cupped hands twice before the Cambro Cup went put into place. Once inside his new enclosure, the larger Cricket ignored food, water, and the other insect in an apparent search for a way out. I'd never imagined an insect pacing, yet this one seemed bent upon it. Of course, in standard fashion, I lost interest quickly and returned the task. Mark, seemingly pleased with himself, stood to watch his latest addition to Insect Zoo. As my fingers flew across the keyboard, I offhandedly remarked, "You know, if memory serves, I believe that the Chinese used to fight crickets. My money's on the big one." Mark answered with a roll of the eyes and walked off. It could have been minutes or hours. Once I'm absorbed into something, time has a way of marching off on its own. Then on my peripheral vision, there was a sudden flash of movement alongside the instantaneous pop. It sounded as if a single snap was rolled off a snare drum, or in this case, a single strike off a tight plastic lid. I picked up a small container to look inside. There, munching contentedly on some wilted lettuce, was a small Cricket. Just out of his antenna's reach was a larger insect. His body lay on its side and twitched. His legs quivered. Slowly they folded inward and were still. He was dead. I stared in mute disbelief. Did he just commit suicide? Was it an accident? Did it matter? The end result made those quandaries move, didn't they? It was a simple realization, really. I kept him in that cage. I got up, turned off my computer, and picked up the Cricket with its remaining inhabitant. As I hunted for a safe spot, thoughts collided and competed for room to be heard. I ignored all save one. Thankfully, I didn't have to dwell on it or give many words before I found a secluded and secure space. I popped the lid off carefully, and the Cricket's antenna danced. As I knelt, the bug scuttled slightly, but otherwise stayed secure in his place. I waited for a leap from the cup, yet when no jump was forthcoming, I tapped lightly to jostle him free. The insect's dark, round head seemed to look as his antenna bobbed, almost as if in question. In answer, I replied, "Go." As the small creature crawled away, the remainder of his life measured in weeks, I wonder how to count mine. I question whether or not the value of life versus another can truly be measured. Is life simply life? Or is how well you live it and the purpose in which it is lived dictate its value? Beholden to the presence of a Cricket.
Wow. So... every time I hear it, it's better, and your voice definitely helps. it's a phenomenal piece of writing, and it takes twists and turns and reflects on lots of stuff. just bringing back the notion of the isolation that you described in a moment before you read that, and your intent focus upon these two crickets and the shared camaraderie of finding them and, you know, caging them and watching them die. Not that that was your intention, but that you described in the story, and then the revelation when this did unexpectedly happen. How would you say that the isolation, especially from the natural world, how would you say that impacts your creative process and even your life while you're in there?
And by no means am I shortchanging anyone who's got a disability when I say this, but it's a lot like having something removed from your being. When someone is blind, they learn to cope. When someone is deaf, they learn to feel. When we are removed, for me at least, I learn other means to reach. Since I cannot touch someone with my hand, try to reach with my words, if I am properly articulating that. And that's how I feel this isolation has grown in my writing. I try to convey a sense of being through the only way I can reach out, which is my voice. It's the only thing that can go beyond these walls, because I'm so trapped here. And that's what this isolation has grown in me, is that. With that is the excite and sensation, and in many ways is akin to a burden, because I feel more deeply now than I did before. And constant, I guess, regret and reflection on everything that was and is part of that. But that makes me better moving forward.
So you would say that the creative process that you go through to create stories like this one and other ones that you've had in previous issues of Unlocked, and that, knowing you personally, I've read in various capacities, you think that the process that leads to that has helped lead you to adapt, as you're describing, in a more effective way? That are you saying, I guess I'm asking, am I getting this right, that the creative process, not just the isolation itself, but your response to the isolation, the creative process that you go through, that is part of your adaptation and strengthening of other senses?
Yeah, that's basically it. Because I can't act physically, so I have to act emotionally and mentally. I can't be there in person, so I try to be there in spirit. Okay. And those words carry that. Yeah.
So, at this point then, having gone through that and learned that about yourself and used it as a tool, what role does writing play for you in your life? That's how you reach out, and I mean, I guess there's obviously some overlap here, but like, why is it so important to you to keep writing, I guess?
Oh, man. When I was a kid, I wrote little short stories that were just bad. They were awful, looking back. But I mean, they were kid stories, and writing at first was just a way to pour out the ideas that crammed my head in the bursting. And I put it down for a while, you know, and then it evolved, as we do as people,
Wow. So would you say then that as you've expanded and continued your and improved your writing over the years, that you have found the ability to connect with people and reach people that you would not have found while isolated inside otherwise?
I've had varying degrees of success. It's hit or miss. Connection is a fickle thing. Some people, it's instantaneous. Other people, it rolls off them like a duck off a water's back. And that's fine. It's not everything is for everybody. But for those it impacts greatly. And it's funny because you never know. I mean, you think you're writing or saying something so profound, but then you can say something offhandedly in an off comment, and that changes someone's life. So it also teaches you to be mindful, because no one is an island, and we're all kind of in this sea, in this ocean, traveling through this mess together, if that makes any sense at all.
Okay, yeah. So
my mind just kind of tumbles in metaphor constantly. I apologize if that seems...
No, it's quite all right. It's easy to follow. You're explaining yourself quite well. What is it that you think readers outside the prison walls should take from reading your work or other works, even from people behind bars?
What should they take from my work or other works?
Like, if a reader who doesn't know you and isn't reading it because they know you encounters, like, what is it they should take, and why should they even bother reading yours and other entries in a, you know, a publication like Unlocked?
Well, I would hope they read, you know, reading is obviously enjoyment, but once they start to enjoy it, I hope they read to understand. I hope they read to broaden their horizon. I would hope that they read to see through another person's eyes, to hear that voice as their own and feel the words as if they were coming from their own mouth, and to have that empathy and that understanding. But, you know, to live with the characters that we create, you know, in any story that we all love, it unifies us. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, through these readings and this crazy unity, basically, that's what I hope.
All right, and is there anything that you would like readers of this work or of the journal in general that you think that they should know about you personally?
You have 1 minute remaining.
Hang up and call me back and think of an answer to that question.
I I've not only just begun to write, but to act, to see, to hold my hand out and say, here, we can do this better together.
Hello again, Mr. Berryman. Is there anything that you would like readers of this piece or any of your other work in Unlocked or elsewhere to know about you personally? Thank you very much for your time and your insight. I am particularly touched by the notion that we write to connect and that it expands our abilities to do so beyond what they would otherwise be because we're isolated. I like that part a lot. I have never thought about it on those terms as an adaptive solution to connection, but I'm really glad that you put that in, that you mentioned that. That's really insightful. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to end this recording then. Thank you very much for your time.